Freddie Jr.
Off there. Oh, okay. We're off there.
Reverend J.W. Friday. Really, Raina Evans.
And we're getting up. And we want to thank everyone else in this long, long list of supporters, individuals, community organizations, and businesses. We're getting off the air.
Thank you. We'll be ending with Eldon Jones, incredible saxophonist extraordinaire.
And then we'll return you to the studios.
Then we'll return you to our studios. This has been T. Simpson and
Yvonne Rivero.
It's the 32nd Annual King Celebration. Thank you very much. Enjoy.
And that does it for KBOO's special programming for the MLK Day celebration. It's about 6 p.m. here at KBOO Portland. It's time for Labor Radio.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
It's Labor Radio. Thanks everyone for tuning in tonight. I'm Nick Bubb, and here with me is
Michael Cathcart.
Good evening, Michael. It's been a long time since we've been together. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Nick?
Good. And I want to know what you think about this quote.
Yeah.
Most of the poor people in our country are working every day, but they're making wages so inadequate that they cannot even begin to function in the mainstream of the economic life of the nation.
I would say that that's probably exactly accurate.
I think it's exactly accurate, too. What shocks me is that is from a speech in 1968 from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
Man, I mean, I suppose that not a whole lot has changed in terms of the plight of the working man, but that is ridiculously poignant for the moment that we're in right now.
I feel it. Like, that just resonates with me. And I think everyone knows that Dr. King was a civil rights leader, and I just wonder how many people actually know that he was a champion for the working person and the labor movement overall.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I'm sure that it's been talked about all day, but it is certainly part of the legacy that's lost. You know, a lot of the history of Martin Luther King is written by the people who were initially against him and likely were the people against him even up until the day he died.
Right.
And so it's about equality and peace and brotherhood, but you don't get a lot of the more sort of radical revolutionary side of the things that he was really learning, especially towards the end of his life, that he was really preaching about.
Right. Yeah. I certainly, when I was a child, I certainly wasn't educated on that. And the more that I learn about Dr. King, the more and more respect I have for him. He's a hero of mine.
Yeah. And one thing that, I mean, it may have to do with simply the amount of attention I paid in school, but I don't recall ever learning that he actually ever went to prison, that he was arrested for anything other than, or, you know, that he did anything other than gave speeches and marched. I mean, I think the American school system, particularly the history departments, seem to whitewash a lot of that.
They have, yeah. I certainly don't recall learning a lot of that either, but the man was incredible, the sacrifices that he made, up to and including his life for everyone.
Absolutely.
You know, he's certainly a hero for the African-American community, but he's a hero for everybody, for anybody that's got to go to work, for everybody that's got to punch a time clock, for everybody that works with their hands or sits at a desk or pretty much does anything, and they're not able to live off wealth that they've, you know, inherited or been fortunate to encounter.
Yeah. And it's interesting that, I mean, he just in his time, he was a dissident, but the government and the authorities tended to allow him to mobilize people and speak out when it came to voting rights and civil rights. But once it became an issue about ending the war in Vietnam and how that was tied directly to racism and also to economic racism, that's when he started to really preach about those confluence of those things is when he became an enemy of the state.
Yeah, it's tragic. So Dr. King is a hero to me, obviously is to you as well. Yeah. But for those of you listening, we want to hear what Dr. King means to you. The number to call in and tell us is 503-231-8187. Go ahead and call in anytime and tell us what this special holiday to celebrate the life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. means to you.
Absolutely.
So Dr. King was a proponent for unions. So, of course, I have to give my union plug here. if you can get into an apprenticeship, if you can get into a trade, I definitely think that that's a good thing for people out there to do. The trades are one of the few things. They can't export that job.
Yeah.
You know, they can't because we're building stuff here, and they obviously can't. They can't build a building in China and put it on a ship and bring it here, or at least not that I know of.
Not at this point, yeah. I suppose they're working on that.
I'm sure they are. I'm sure when they can figure that out, that's the first thing that they're going to do to try to save a dollar.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, yeah, the things that need to be built here, the things that actually are required to be done in this country are the jobs that are the safest at this point, and a lot of those are the ones that have the strongest unions.
But But outside of that, outside of the people in those jobs that are protected through the strength of organization of a union, it seems that the protections are really only in place for the rich.
Mm-hmm.
We have a bunch of jobs of anybody that's middle and low income. Their jobs are all being sent overseas. Any kind of manufacturing, anything that's been automated and they can put somebody on an assembly line, those jobs are going where they can pay somebody dollars on the hour. But the same thing is not true when it comes to people that are rich, like doctors, for example.
Right.
They do not allow doctors. I mean, it's very, very extremely limited circumstances that they'll let a well-trained medical professional from another country come and practice in the United States.
Yeah, it's far more likely that you'll encounter someone who was, you know, a medical doctor or a surgeon or something at the top of their field or at least very successful in the country that they may have come from, performing a job that is nowhere near that status in this country simply because we aren't willing to allow that education to transfer over here. We don't trust it or we don't recognize that as being valid to operate or to perform medical procedures in this country.
Right. And I think the people on the top do an excellent job of putting fear on everybody. Like, oh, do you really want this person from Asia operating on you, you know? But the truth of the matter is some of those are very well, very excellently trained medical professionals. This is why people pay money to fly to parts of Europe or Asia to get their medical procedures done.
Yeah.
And they save money even after the airfare, even after the you know, whatever kind of lodging they have to pay over there, or if they just stay in the hospital, they're saving money versus going and getting treated here.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same with people driving across the border to Canada to buy prescription drugs because they can't afford them here. I mean, yeah, you can say, well, we have the best, we have, you know, the most robust medical system, health system in this country, but you still have people who, I mean, we're in the middle of the ACA being, the Obamacare being, they're trying to repeal that.
Right.
And on top of that, we still pay far more than any other country, first world country, in terms of medical bills and costs and things like that. So I think that we may put our healthcare system on a pedestal and our doctors on a pedestal, but I don't think that necessarily translates to, or I don't think that we can necessarily exclude people from other countries
right.
simply because we don't think that their medical systems are up to the same standards that ours are.
Right, because one of the things that Bernie Sanders brought up, he just had his bill to allow us to import drugs from Canada and other places where they're cheaper, and even the Democrats, some of them, voted against this because mm-hmm. they received very large contributions from Big Pharm. But their reason that they're giving, of course, is, well, it's just not safe. We haven't vetted this medicine enough. How can we be sure what we're consuming? And Bernie Sanders said, oh, that's nonsense. We import our steaks, we import our chicken, we get product from everywhere, we're eating it, we're putting it into our bodies. If that's safe, then certainly importing medicine should be safe as well.
Yeah, there's so many countless other elements of our environment, whether it's, you know, food or the air we breathe, or the water we drink, that we don't have that much information on, that that does come from places that we may not know necessarily where it's coming from, and yet we don't seem to bat an eyelash or an eye when that happens. But because of the fact that they're the big pharmaceutical companies have their profits risked by that process in particular, that's when the wall comes down. That's, you know, that's when it becomes a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing that shocks me is the fact that other businesses are going along with this, because although this is great for Big Pharm, I mean, they're figuring out how to extract people's pensions from them and all that they've saved for retirement. They're figuring out, oh, we can just up their medical costs, and that's how we're going to get all that money away from them. It's really greed. But I'm surprised, you know, businesses have to pay for a large share of insurance costs for their employees.
You'd think that they would be on board with anything that would lower those costs, that would lower the amount that they have to spend on anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's exactly what I would think too. But apparently it it gets shot down even by the people that we trust, like you know, the Democrats. But
yeah, I mean, it's hard to say that we can really trust all the Democrats at this point, considering everything that's happened in the last year and a half or so.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There's a big divide even going now. Mm-hmm. They're calling them the Bernie-crats.
Yeah.
And then the Democrats.
It's funny to think that, like, you know, 2 months ago, 3 months ago, the main discussion was, well, how is the Republican Party going to fall apart after this? When Trump loses, the Republican Party is going to fall apart, and what are they going to do? Is it going to split into two? Is it going to be the Tea Party side and the establishment side? And now we see the exact same thing happening on the other side of the aisle.
Right,
the Democrats completely disintegrating because there is no core to that party at this point. There's no moral that they're built around.
Right. No, it's more like, I mean, they call it the Bernie-crats and the Democrats, but it's like the Progressive Party versus the neoliberal party.
Yeah, the Wall Street Party versus the People Party.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Party. The working party versus the wealthy party.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, we could probably have an entire hour-long show just about that topic right there, but it is something that we're going to see play out more and more over the next 4 to hopefully not 8 years. But I think the next time we vote for president, there may be either the Democrats may have completely realigned around the more progressive, you know, left side of the party, or there may be a third party on that side. You know, who knows?
Yeah. Either way, I have to go with the progressive.
Absolutely.
So for everyone listening, if you weren't tuned in before, I want to hear what Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. means to you. He's a champion of civil rights. He's also a champion for labor.
Yeah.
The number to call is 503-231-8187. Call in and tell us your thoughts.
Yeah, and let's hear that number one more time.
The number again is 503-231-8187.
Yeah, and if you're out in your car right now, really slow commute home. I mean, I know the roads are very icy. Be careful. Maybe if you're listening and you're stuck in traffic, maybe pull over and give us a call. Wait it out a little bit.
I'd love to hear from people that are stuck in their car. They're you know, pull over and that dedicated.
You want to talk about jobs programs? I mean, let's. The city of Portland should hire some people to get back or to get into some snowplows or grab some salt and get on the roads.
That's what I'm talking about.
It's been almost a week since the snow fell, and yet we are still debilitated right now.
I read that we only have 2 snowplows, and that's it. I've heard they're trying to reach out to the Washington Department of Transportation and get them involved.
Yeah, I think that the city of Portland had to but receive a bunch of salt. De-icing salt from Seattle.
Wow.
Which, you know, the Portland-Seattle rivalry is very, very much alive, and that goes in their win column, not our win column.
Yeah, no kidding.
But yeah, I mean, it's treacherous out there, so certainly, you know, if you're stuck in traffic or if you're on a dangerous road, maybe pull over, give it a minute, and give us a call.
Call us at 503-231-8187. That's funny, man. I would do that. I think you should run for mayor.
Yeah.
Because I hire me. I'll grab a shovel for $15 an hour, $15 now. Yeah. I'll go scrape up the ice. I'll help people.
I mean, we could be a living wage job.
Yeah, why not?
Absolutely. I mean, I know a bunch of people in this city who I guarantee you offered a living wage to do things like that. You know, even if it's just a seasonal or just, you know, a few days worth of work, would jump on that opportunity. This city is chronically underemployed. We still have people mandated to pump your gas. That's a required job in this state. Why can't we be hiring people why can't we be either buying more plows or freelancing, you know, contracting people to be plow our roads? I mean, where is the infrastructure in terms of keeping our drivers and our bikers and our pedestrians safe?
I know. And you know, it's mind-boggling. We sold our house earlier this year, but it wasn't very big. I mean, it was a little big for us because we don't have any kids, but 2,000 square foot house, we were paying almost $6,000 a year in property taxes. And it's like, where's this going? I would give right? me some clear roads when the snowpocalypse comes.
Yeah, I mean, or let's get some roads that don't have potholes in them, even when there isn't snow. I mean,
yeah, no kidding.
And obviously, that's a major major topic that City Hall's been wrestling with for a while. And we as a collective in this state don't like to pay taxes. So whenever it comes down to it, it has to be something that they tax and no one wants to pay for that. But I feel like this week or this past month, we've had three serious snow storms come that pretty much shut our city down.
Yeah.
It should maybe be a wake-up call that, you know, even if we aren't going to buy new plows or even if we aren't going to really invest in snow infrastructure because it may not happen again for a while, at least the disaster preparedness side of things.
Right.
I mean, I know a number of people who were stuck out on the roads, including myself, overnight. I mean, not overnight, but for a seriously long time in the snow. What happens when it's not just a snowstorm, but maybe there's something larger? You know,
you never know. We're due for one, they say. Exactly. They're due the big one, they keep calling it. We're due for the big one.
Yeah.
That is something. We could definitely create a lot of jobs in that fashion, get people out there to work on the emergency preparedness, on cleaning the streets.
Yeah.
Bernie Sanders, that was one of the things that resonated with me, is that he said we need to spend $1 trillion on infrastructure.
Yeah, a Green New Deal of sorts, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
One that put people back to work building, renewing our infrastructure, updating our infrastructure, and building it for the 21st century, and then also switching us from fossil fuels to renewable energy. I mean, that's a plan that even by the end of the campaign, Hillary was tiptoeing towards, you know? She was flirting with that idea. But it's, I mean, I can't think of a single better use of our collective tax money than to completely redesign the nation's infrastructure.
Not even a wall?
Right. Yeah. Well, all right. A wall. And then number one, wall. And then two, everything else.
No kidding. Could you imagine if instead of building a wall, we were building high-speed rail?
Right. The Hyperloop?
The Hyperloop. No, seriously. That's the railroads. Absolutely. That's a great high-paying job.
Yeah.
That's a great mode of transportation. They can power it off green energy. They don't have to burn jet fuels to move a maglev train.
And we are, I mean, if you look at the rest of the developed world, you know, you look at Europe, you look at you know, large portions of Asia, we are the only country that is at our level of wealth that does not have any form of, I mean, we have Amtrak that has a few rail lines that run across the country and up and down the coasts, but I mean, if you are serious about wanting to get across the country or down to San Francisco or Los Angeles or anything like that, you're going to have to drive or fly because it is insanely expensive and it takes way too long.
On the train.
And that's completely unacceptable for the year 2017.
You are burning fuel and you are burning money.
Exactly. Exactly. And high-speed rail is energy efficient, too. So I don't really know what is holding us back besides the profits of the oil companies.
That's it. But you know what's sad, though? It's like even some of the working class are supporting it, you know? Because when Exxon is your income, or, you know, like even me and my trade as a pipe fitter, the leadership of that, all they can think about is, oh, more pipes, more oil, more pipes, you know? Because they're not thinking about, they're not really concerned with the oil, but they're concerned with the pipes aspect of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to see a truth when your income depends on not seeing that truth, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. But I think, and I tell this, to all my brothers and sisters, is I'm like, well, we need to be proactive.
Yeah.
Because things are changing. There's going to be a new way of doing it. We need to be on the cutting edge of a green revolution, not on the trailing end.
Yeah. And if there is a union, I mean, particularly a union like what you're in, I mean, if that union is supporting candidates and policies and infrastructure initiatives that are geared towards building the infrastructure of the 21st century, then not only are they championing the right causes and on the right side of history, but they are also probably going to be the first ones to get the contracts for those projects when they inevitably do happen, because that is the future. That's what's going to happen, whether it takes 10 years or 100 years, it's what needs to happen.
Right. Yeah. I mean, exactly. I mean, like for the boomers, you know, they're all retiring right now. They're at the age, I read an article today, they've got $10 trillion. They've got $10 trillion in 401ks. And they're at the age now where they have to take required minimum distributions. And it starts at like 3.65% of however much they have saved per year. And then it goes up. The IRS has a schedule on how much you have to take. And if they don't take their distribution, they get taxed 50% of whatever their distribution was supposed to be. That means they're going to be having a lot of money coming out,
right?
Which is a whole other topic. I mean, you know, speaking of labor, this is our retirements, our accounts depend on these things.
Yeah.
And who knows what's going to happen to the market when all the boomers are required to take their money out of that? That's going to have to do something to the stock prices, I'm thinking.
Oh yeah.
But, you know, also they're getting to that age that the new generation is up and coming. The millennial generation is now the largest group in the population. Did you know that?
Really? I didn't. I mean, in the working population?
In the population. The millennial generation is now the largest generation. The boomers had more at their time.
Right.
But enough of them have passed now that the millennial generation, biggest one.
I guess that makes sense. I mean, the millennial generation, that's people who are age 18 to 35, I believe, right now.
Yeah.
That's the healthiest section of our population. That's right. That would make sense. But still, Being a millennial, I still have that mindset of like, well, the boomers are still the ones who have the dominant share of our population.
They do, because they have the money, exactly. Mm-hmm. So they got the power. They're and of course the older folks have always voted in higher proportions.
And they are also, I mean, just to tie it back into labor in general, I mean, since the crash of 2008, a lot of the people who maybe would have been retired and out of the working population now are still working, are still pushing on because it's a financial necessity.
Right.
But because they are still there, the experienced people are still working at, you know, whatever level they're at, that puts essentially a cap or a ceiling on the career trajectory of people who are younger than the millennials.
Sure, yeah.
So you have a lot of millennials who are still working for lower paying jobs or working jobs that are not at the level that their parents would have been because of
the higher paying jobs aren't open for them. Exactly. They're still being filled by the boomers. Yeah, exactly.
The ones who would have retired are still working, and therefore the rest of the younger generation is kind of stuck against the wall.
We had a guy at my work just retire. He was 71 years old.
71 and he's still working with his hands.
I know. I couldn't, but I hope I'm not having to do that.
Yeah. I mean, very impressive and more power to him, but it seems like that skill would be better used, you know, building his own little projects at his house, or you know, enjoying retirement.
What my eyes are on at that
build
age.
Build a treehouse for his grandkids.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
yeah. No kidding.
Man, that's 71 is far too old. Unless you choose to want to do that. Unless you're, you know, if you're doing an intellectual job, if you're sitting behind a desk and you get fulfillment out of it, sure, you should be able to work till whenever you want. But if you're doing something that takes physical demands on your body and you aren't doing it by choice, you're doing it by necessity, that's unacceptable. That needs to, there needs to be some way to address that.
I think so too.
Yeah.
Well, if you're just tuning in, happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
Yes, indeed.
This is a very important day to all of us. A hero for civil rights, a hero for labor. Tell us what Dr. King means to you. The number to call is 503-231-8187. We want to hear what you think, and we want to hear what the doctor means to you.
Yeah. As a complete side note, it is interesting that our president-elect be kicked off Martin Luther King weekend by essentially denouncing and attacking one of the most prominent living legends from that era. Simply because the guy said what he believed. I mean, Georgia Congressman John Lewis, you know, he marched across the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma. He was a major player within the civil rights movement and has been a congressman for a long time. Came out, I think it was on a CNN interview, I believe. I didn't see much of it, but. He basically said, this is an illegitimate president, and Trump attacked him. And that's Martin Luther King Day weekend.
Hey, check this out. Somebody's calling in
right
now.
All right.
Hopefully they've got a good thought for us.
Hello.
Helen, how are you?
No, I'm not Helen, but I'm calling.
Oh, Colin, you said.
Listen,
okay.
You're saying some stuff about boomers, which is really not accurate. It's kind of silly. But as far as Martin Luther King is concerned, I think his influence, although it's certainly not his ideas per se, is real. I can really see it in the beautiful Standing Rock movement.
Absolutely.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah.
Because even though people, of course, are acting on their own culture and out of their own need and out of their own passion and heart, the influence of Dr. King or his spirit is really in there in the Standing Rock movement. I think it's very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good thing. What I had to say about the boomers is,
mm-hmm.
I don't like to see this kind of false dichotomy set up between millennials and older people. I think that's one of the things that Standing Rock is proving, that you've got elders and younger people working together in concert,
mm-hmm.
and each contributing what they have to contribute.
Mm-hmm.
I am in my 70s, and I am working. And if you wonder why, all you have to do is look at what's happening with the development and the price of rents,
mm-hmm.
and so on and so forth. People can't afford to retire because they can't afford to retire. So when the older generation was putting money in the bank, they were actually receiving interest on their money.
Mm-hmm.
That's how my father had some money. He was getting 7, 8%, maybe 10% interest. There's mm-hmm. been no interest at all. That means you put your money in the bank or in a CD and you watch it go down. So the encouragement is, well, why don't you put it in the stock market? Well, isn't that nice? Stock market is a gambling casino. And if you're looking towards being 80 years old, you don't necessarily want to gamble your money away.
No, exactly. So look what happened to all the folks in 2008 that trusted the stock market and thought they were going to retire then.
Right. It's not about retiring anyway. And it's certainly not about sitting in a rocking chair or watching TV or doing your little projects or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We've all got to get out there and contribute in order to stop what's happening in this country. And as far as the Democrats are concerned, one of the big myths that's been happening, and it's a Trumpism, I hate to use that name. I like the way the Capitol Steps referred to him as Tronald Dump, and that's my feeling
that's great.
About it. Okay, so as far as he's concerned, his whole thing is, you got to be a winner, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy, I'm the winner, and everybody else is a loser.
Yep.
You know, mm-hmm. don't fall into that. The election was stolen. It's not about winning and losing. And the Democrats, sure, everybody's in disarray because everyone is surprised. It doesn't mean that the Democrats or anybody else is a loser, except in the sense that we all seem to be losing something really important. But one thing we can't lose is our brains and our heart, because that's mm-hmm. what we got and what the other guys, you know, don't seem to have. So there's a lot of pulling True. Back and a lot of retrenchment and so on and so forth. And that's part of the movement.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't be calling people losers. We're playing into that guy's stupid, you know, that's the game.
Right.
The apprentice, you're fired, I'm the winner. You know, that whole thing is just bull hockey. Total.
Absolutely.
Okay?
No,
don't talk about boomers like we're all a bunch of old farts who should be sitting around.
I think you might have misunderstood, because it sounds like we actually are in perfect agreement.
Yeah, I would agree.
The system is set up where it's unfortunate, where you used to be able to collect a pension, and now people can't afford to retire. What we were talking about in that comment are the people that are 70 years old working in high-paying management positions that aren't making the way for a new person to come in and step up.
Well, that's bull hockey, too. Because what people should be doing is maybe organizing into worker-owned cooperatives and using the experience of the older people who've been there and then contributing some of the new ideas.
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when people
that should be
talk
happening.
About technology, remember that it's all technology. The
mm-hmm.
first electric fan or whatever was technology. It's all technology. It's not now like now there's technology and before people were hitting rocks together, you know? The wheel was a technological invention. So, you know, there's a lot. I don't want to just be ranting and raving here, but what I did hear you say was something about, you know, the older people are staying in their management positions. Actually, what's happening to a lot of older people is they're getting canned, they're getting bumped, okay? They're watching
mm-hmm.
people who are 20 years old being promoted over them.
Absolutely.
And then they're being kind of released into the netherland of, well, you're lucky to have your Social Security because it's some kind of entitlement and we're going to chip it away from you if we can.
Well, we disagree with that mentality too, because Social Security is not an entitlement. That's something that we've all paid into.
We've all
that
paid
Congress
into.
Has done the wrong thing with it. They've mismanaged it and used it for other purposes.
Yeah.
Right. So I think we, you know, we need to work together on this. And I just, you know, it's great if we agree, and I hope so. Mm-hmm. And I think we all know.
Sounds like we do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we got to figure out what's right and wrong and just work for it. And then everybody do the thing that they can do.
Absolutely.
That they can. So anyway, thanks for letting me rant a little bit.
Of course. No, thank you for calling.
Appreciate it. We love to hear your thoughts.
Thank you very much.
Have a great evening.
Have a great evening. It looks like we've got another call as well.
Let's see.
Hello. Are you there?
Yeah. My name's April.
Hi, April.
Hi. I just got home from work, and
safely,
I find
I
it very ironic and very horrible that somehow our leaders, our misleaders, have kind of turned MLK Day around. For one thing, they always celebrate it on the Monday following, so that a lot of people aren't even aware of the real date of his birthday, January 15th, every year. And you see closures, and you see Martin Luther King Day activities split between the 2 days. And it's also pretty horrible that Martin Luther King was about helping everyone.
Absolutely.
You know, the last people he was working with were the garbage workers.
Mm-hmm.
And he was starting a poor people's campaign, which is why he was killed.
Exactly.
And yes.
Now the only people that get to celebrate the actual holiday, not his actual birthday, because I did celebrate on Sunday going to two different things.
Nice.
But the only people that actually get to celebrate his holiday with a day off are not the people he was helping.
No.
They're the people with, you know, better jobs.
Right, the bankers.
Actually get holidays off.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And what Martin Luther King means to me is not just celebrating one day a year, but celebrating every day. That, you know, by working together, it may be, you know, our causes may be really unpopular, but by working together, we can keep struggling and we can have vision, and someday we'll get there.
Absolutely.
I agree, and I think from how I feel, at least in our area in Portland, I feel like our mission is super popular, at least among the crowds and people that I meet and shake hands with. You know, it just seems like the people with the money, the people